This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. It is 6:15 on the 15th of May, and I'm joined on this podcast by Henry Viola here at HT Viola and Phil Oakley of ShareScope, of everywhere. It's everywhere. It's writing for all the best outlets out there at the moment, and his star is rising again. Never really fell. So we're here. Find me on Twitter at Congress3 as well. Please follow Henry at his account at HT Viola, and please follow Phil at his Investing Stuff blog. Investing Stuff. I still can't get over that name, but we're here again, folks. Welcome back. Thank you all for your feedback. Thank you all for subscribing on YouTube and all the other channels that you're on, and for keeping us abreast of what's going on in the markets and telling us what your thoughts are about what we've spoken about. I think somebody mentioned another pod we'd been on, and they bought the stock, and it's done phenomenally well for them. So if you go away and do your own research, because we don't make recommendations, and then you buy the stock, kudos to you. But thank you for telling us that you got the heads up from us initially. Henry, what do you want to tell us, mate? What's been happening in the past 2 weeks? Tell us very, very briefly. I'm conscious that we don't want to keep Jared too happy by having 90-minute podcasts, so I'm trying to cut this one down, mate. A little bit.
No, none of that, Peter. None of that. No, I've had a very good fortnight, thank you. The markets are playing ball. My portfolio is looking great. I've had a takeover from Darktrace, which looks like it's gone through. And actually, the buoyancy in the market's given me an opportunity to start trimming a few positions. So I'm not a big fan of selling when everybody else is selling. I much prefer selling when everybody else is buying. And so actually I've been trimming a few positions here and there. One of the ones I got rid of recently was actually Hargreaves Lansdown, which I think it's a good company, but I'm not entirely sure it's ever going to get back to where it was. It's got an awful lot of headwinds up against it, and I've taken the opportunity to trim that.
It's one of them stocks I know that you got a lot of heat on. I got a lot of heat on because I spoke about it as well. And it went down to quite lows. I'd not held it, but you held on again, you know, being the tenacious person you are. You were like, nope, I know there's value here. And eventually the sentiment started to change a little bit. Then it came out with good news. Shares popped. Lots of people that didn't want to buy it at lower prices were buying it at higher prices. So the fact that you're now selling when they're buying, kudos to you. So smart move. Well done. Very well done.
Thank you.
Phil, you're sitting there, mate, tanned as usual. Yeah. And you've been keeping an eye on the market, mate. I'll go back to the market in a little while and tell you where the FTSE is in 100. You've got loads to share with us, I know, because you've been monitoring the markets and you're writing for the guys at Citywire regarding quality companies. So you're monitoring almost everything on a daily basis. So other than writing for Questa and other outlets, what have you been keeping your eye on, mate?
Well, generally, markets across the board. Everybody seems very happy. You know, I think everything in terms of stock market seems to be pretty much record highs. And I don't know. I'm struggling to work it out, actually, because it's a strange backdrop. I mean, there's some markets, you know, like the UK, which have, you know, taken years and years and years to get to like a record high. And then you've got the American market, the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ, all hitting record highs, or pretty much at record highs. And I'm a little bit perplexed by it, because I'm not sure I'm not sure the sort of fundamentals are sort of certainly in America, justify a record higher, really. Granted, there's been some good quality earnings out there, but the backdrop's not great. I know that the inflation figures were slightly better than expected today, but there's still not great figures. And I'm reading more and more now about consumer spending is down in America. Credit card delinquencies are going up. American, we seem to have a lot of debt, in the economy. And I look back to sort of 2007, and I'm not trying to, ring the bell that, this is exactly the same as 2007, because it isn't. But there are some similarities. We do have very high levels of debt amongst consumers. And amongst and governments particularly, and we talked about the bond market on the previous podcast. And you look at the rating of the valuation of the US stock market, and it's on about 21 times earnings. Interest rates are around sort of 5%. It's difficult to see, how the US market really kicks on from here. I think the UK market is different altogether. I think everything's led by the US, as most of us know, or anybody who's been investing for a while knows. So if the US market falls out of bed, everything else will fall out of bed. But the performance in the UK is, stellar, really. Last few weeks, UK's been going fantastically well. I think we touched on it last time we all spoke. You look at the makeup of the FTSE, in terms of mining companies, financial companies, and the outlook for these companies, if the economy stays okay, just okay, it doesn't need to be stellar, just okay. Looks really good. And unlike the American market, we've got a lot of shares in the UK that are still actually on quite low valuations. So if you look at, the fact that the American market, what's driven a lot of shares in the American market is not just the earnings going up, but it's the multiple attached to those earnings. And I look at the UK, and you're looking at shares still on very low PE ratios or price to book values, and you think there's still scope for these to, potentially go up, even in an interest rate environment which isn't as favorable as it was as a year ago. So I think the UK is looking pretty good. And I think you're going to touch on this, but you've got the takeovers, you've got this Anglo-American story that keeps on going. I wrote an article that's published on the ShareScope website today about UK banks. And actually, I looked at it yesterday, and best two performing shares in the FTSE 100 this year are NatWest and Barclays. And I don't think many
Beggar's
people would
belief.
have called that out at the start of the year. And
Beggar's belief, mate.
you start looking at the valuations of the banks, you look at the profit forecast, you look at their improving returns, and you think, you know what? These could still keep on going quite a bit higher in with a little bit of a fair wind behind them. So, I still have my doubts, about the underlying economies, in terms of property prices, the strength of the consumer. I still think investors need to be really careful, and in terms of, what's going to happen with the bond market, because there's still a hell of a lot of debt being issued. But I think I'm as I was, a couple of weeks ago. I feel quite confident on the UK, certainly the big caps, and even some of the mid caps. There's been some really, really good results. I think it was, Britvic, the soft drinks maker, came out today with a cracking set of figures.
I'm going to discuss that later. Yeah, absolutely.
So, So I wonder now whether we could get a situation where, having been, you know what it's like, guys, you know, where people only start to buy in once it starts to move.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you look at the way that the FTSE is moving, and you look at the fact that a lot of big fund managers have like ignored the UK market. And you wonder if they could be like now an accelerated process of big money managers moving money out of America into, say, the UK. And if that happens, then you know I think you could see 9,000 on the FTSE. I don't think that it's. I mean, what are we now? 8,450 or something like that.
Yeah, 8,445, yeah, today. Yeah.
So I mean, it's not.
It
It's
could
been
well
500 points. It's what. You know,
5%.
Yeah, you could well see some institutional flows moving, but I think a large part of this is being driven by the lack of price searching in the market. You know, there's an awful lot of passive money swilling around, and it's been sort of the standard mantra for 10 years, just buy the S&P 500, just buy the US. And even amongst retail investors, you know, you go onto social media now and look at what commentators are talking about. It's all the big known names. It's Apple, it's Amazon, it's Palantir, it's Google, it's Tesla. You know, there's 60 odd channels covering the same 20 companies. And I don't think there's that much actual active price searching going on. You know, there's a lot of pressure on active managers. Money's being taken away from actives and into passives. And the way that my understanding of passive benchmarks works is that an awful lot of them allocate money to the companies that have already got the highest weightings in the benchmark. And so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If Google is your number one company in the benchmark by size, more money will be added to it, and therefore it will stay at the number one benchmark. And doesn't really matter what the price to earnings ratio is. The money's not paying any attention to it. It's just saying this is the biggest company by weight, therefore we'll put more money in it. And I think that's why the US, you know, I agree with you. You've got this pressure on consumer spending. You've got this rising delinquency rate with credit cards and consumer loans. You've got pressure on house buyers. You've got pressure on companies. You've got unemployment starting to tick up in certain states. There's a lot of amber lights flashing, and yet the stock market is just saying, "Yeah, don't worry. Just buy some more Google, buy some more Microsoft, buy some more Apple, and forget about it."
Yeah,
And I don't
I
know
agree with you.
what the
Phil,
trigger is to reverse that.
yeah. Sorry, Phil. What were we going to add to that? Yeah, I agree with you, Henry. Sorry.
I think, you know, I mean, you could argue the US market's been a crowded trade for a while. But it's like, it does feel like, you know, turning up at the beach on a sunny bank holiday, expecting to get somewhere to put your picnic blanket and your windbreak.
Like
It's
that
just not
analogy.
going to happen, is
Yeah.
it? It's just
It's going to be a struggle. Yeah.
it's difficult. You know, if you're saying, you know, can you have a bull market and another, you know, can this bull market kick on from where we are? Well, yeah, it could. You know, we're not at the elevated levels of valuations we saw in the late 1990s and early 2000s. But it's interesting, you know, this AI theme in America, it's interesting to see, you know, what legs does it have? Because, you know, you got, I think Nvidia are reporting tonight, Wednesday, so Wednesday the 15th. So after this podcast, Nvidia will
After the close.
report.
Yeah.
But you've had quite sort of mixed results from, you know, the likes of Intel and AMD. You know, Meta is still frittering away loads of money on, you know, its AI project. So it's not very broad. And I think Henry makes a good point, you know, on you know the passive money that's going into the market, has been going into the market. But I think you are seeing sort of tentative signs of, like, you know, value managers starting to do quite well. And if that keeps on going, then again, it sort of lends strength to the weight that the UK could do quite well. And I mean, it's amazing. I don't think I've ever felt. You might say I'm late to the game, but this is I feel the most sort of optimistic about something like the FTSE 100 than I have for a while, actually. They may not be super companies like you've got in America, but I think, they're not basket cases, and they're not growing that quickly. But look at the valuation that's attached to those earnings, and it's all about an expectations game. In America, the expectations are high share prices, high expectations. In the UK, it's not been like that for a long time, and I think you're seeing signs now that companies that have been in the doldrums are actually starting to pick up a bit. And when they pick up, you get these big move upwards in share prices. I don't know if it'll continue, but I think the point is that they're starting from a price point where they can do that more easily than, say, other markets like the US.
Absolutely, Phil. I think that one of the beautiful things that's happened in the past couple of weeks is some of the data that's come out about how much outflows had been going on in 2023. And then we had some really good news from, I think you pronounce it, Calastone Limited, who came out and said record ISA season regarding boom in inflows into equity funds. So those funds have had additional money go in via the ISAs, and they've then had to deploy that or started to deploy that. We've had some good news or mutings about some reforms coming down the pipe. I spoke and interviewed primary markets manager for the London Stock Exchange today. We spoke about that. There's two trillion sitting on the sidelines from private equity, so they've got to make some purchases with that. They've seen, if they're sensible, that the US market is very richly priced, and like you said, it's a crowded trade. I think there's a term called herd motel or something like that that the Yanks use, where they all in the same all going to the same place to buy, as Henry says, Google or Meta or Nvidia and so on and so forth. So what are they doing? They're coming looking over in the UK. I think there's some money coming from the US into the UK, and we see that via the direct opportunistic sort of bids that have been going on, and therefore we're going to see more of that going forward. I suspect that at some point or other we'll have a bit of news which isn't so good. I'm hoping it's not tonight for my Nvidia, and people will take a shot and take a breath. And those people that didn't want to buy the FTSE or the components at 7,000, who are now cheerleading the stock, the market at four, at 8.5, could be actually quite, in a little bit late. But there's takeovers still coming. I'm going to talk about those takeovers in a few minutes, and there's more takeovers to come because of the amount of money that's sloshing around. And I suspect that companies that haven't been gathered up by the stampede from 7,800 to 8,445, other people going, what's wrong with this company, that company? Let's take them out. Yeah. Or you're going to have activists come in to say, look, you need to start doing something to get the share price up because you've been left behind again. Yeah, so I think there's going to be loads more takeovers. Still going to have the odd company that's been a walking zombie that's going to give a profit warning. And dare anybody give a profit warning at the moment, they're going to be absolutely hit on the nose by 25 to 35%, in a heartbeat. So yeah, lots of opportunities out there, I think. And the markets are buoyant, and long may it continue. Back to your question, Phil, the 9,000 number, and it only being like almost like 5% away. It feels a little bit, what I mean? It feels like I've done a marathon just to get here from 7,000 to 8.4, and you're asking Mr. Market to just push us on for that extra 3 or 4 miles when our legs are gone. I want you to be able to get. I want the market to get to 9,000. I'd love for that to happen. We've got 7 months of the year left for it to happen. Is it possible? Absolutely, yes, it is. What's going to be the catalyst for that? Is it more good news? Is it a little bit of reform? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure what you think will be the catalyst to get it there, other than more and more money coming into the market. And ISAs might do it. I don't know.
I think
it won't be takeovers alone.
Maybe you'll just get some serial ramper like they've got over in America. The reappearance of what's his name?
Oh, Roaring Kitty.
Him. Yeah.
Roaring Kitty. Just go like that in a picture. How does that even work? How do you put one picture
like,
and people go, that's a stock to buy? What was the message in the graphics? I couldn't see it. Buy GameStop, I'm back.
I didn't see
it, Phil. AMC, I'm back. So there is a stock that I bought, which I've not told anybody about, right, in the US, which is being ranked by that crowd. And I'm not saying bugger all about it. Yeah. And I'll wait and see what happens with it. We'll see what happens.
I was.
Because the minute they stop ramping it, saying it's crap, and then now it's crap, it'll just go.
No, I mean, I don't think we need that.
I prefer slow and steady moves rather than the big jolts and, you know, heartbreak monitor things going on, mate.
I was watching a documentary last night from Bloomberg. Bloomberg's got a YouTube channel. They do a series of short documentaries called Bloomberg Originals. And this particular one was about a trading company, a day trading company called IX Trading, I think it was. And it's similar, getting young people that don't have a background in investing, don't know how to do the analysis, don't read Phil, for example.
Yeah.
Instead, they listen to Roaring Kitty. They go on Instagram and they got this young girl on there. And I doubt she was more than, as I said, 18, maybe 19. She goes on Instagram and she sees an influencer who's got nice cars and a nice house and holidays and photos on a private jet and all the rest of that nonsense. Gets tangled up with IX trading and within a day had lost 250 quid. By the end of the week, had lost 750 quid. After 6 months, had lost a year's salary and was actually feeling pressured to keep going. So it was so insidious. She described it as sort of this cult-like behavior where you dedicate every waking moment to the methodology touted by IM Trading. These guys rake in hundreds of millions of dollars, by the way. IX Trading, whatever it was called. I can't remember the name of the firm now. Don't go and look it up, ladies and gents, because you'll probably get spammed to death. But that sort of thing, the Roaring Kitty thing, like, it just feels so distasteful to me because you are getting people that don't know what they're doing, tangled up in investing completely the wrong way. You might as well tell them to go down to the casino and put it all on red. You know, that is the absolute last thing we want over here.
It's already here, Henry. It's already here. It's on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's here on X. All right, guys, I'm just going to run back to where we should have started and talk about the markets. I've already mentioned the numbers already. FTSE today closed up at 8,445, up 0.21%. Friday, it closed at 8,433. So it's been up and down a little bit. But when we closed on Friday, I think we'd had six or five consecutive new highs back to back on the FTSE up to Friday. Monday, we had a little bit of a blip where it dropped 0.2%. And then today it's gone back up again. And today we hit the intraday high actually on the FTSE 100 was 8,474. FTSE AIM, we achieved on the cusp of with 792 was the high today on that. And today it was up 0.24% at 791. So it's on the cusp of 800, which is really, really nice. FTSE 250, which is the engine for our indices in the UK, finished up 0.76 at 151 points up at 20,000. So above the 20,000, which is a really nice place to be for the FTSE 250 at 20,775. Phil, do you have the numbers there for Dow Jones and NASDAQ and so on and so forth as to what they hit, because they were hitting records, weren't they? Or two of them were hitting records before
Keep
I came
talking.
Out. I didn't manage to grab them.
I'll get them.
Right. So the other thing I want to talk about here today was regarding takeovers. And one of them that I think we mentioned a couple of podcasts ago was the situation with IDS, which is former Royal Mail. And that one had an increased bid, which it would appear that they are looking to recommend going forward. I'm just getting my notes up here. So that's one that seems to be quite interesting, given the situation where no one else wanted the particular stock, and now it's basically a statement regarding a revised possible offer at £3.70, right? So it's got an extension of a put up and shut up deadline pushed out to 29th of May. The bid of 370, revised possible offer, sorry, comprises of cash consideration £3.60 per share, a final dividend of 2 pence, and a special dividend of 8 pence. Now, we talk about value being sitting there and people not taking the time to do the research, but this now stands. We're going back to April the 16th, right? Less than 1 month ago, right? IDS shares were valued at £2.14 pence per share. 1 month later, valued at 72.7% more. Now, who doesn't want to make 72% in a month? Yeah, it's all that. It's there. It's there, guys. The ladies. The stocks are out there. Yeah, the stocks are out there. Do your research. Don't listen to anybody ramping a stock and telling you it's the doggies. Yeah, do your own research. Work out. Spend the time where it takes a year, 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, 25 years, nearly in my case, to try and find out how much that company is worth. And if you can find a stock that you think is worth £4 and the current share price is £2.14, and somebody comes and bids £3.70 for it, happy days. Yeah, because hardly anybody on Twitter, FinTwit wise, yeah, that owns IDS, because we've experienced what IDS can do. Maybe, it doesn't deliver the mail. It wants to, it's always on strike. It's blah, 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 right? But the Czech billionaire wants to buy it at £3.70. And you know what? Royal Mail's probably going to nod and go, yeah, we'll take that. And it's gone.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
So
I don't think
62%
it's gone.
from.
I don't think it's
Wait a
definitely gone, Pete.
Well, there you go. There you go. So £3.70 from 2.14 4 weeks ago. You've got 10 grand in IDS. Yeah. And now today you've got 17 grand.
In
Yeah.
fairness, I'm going to defend those that didn't spot IDS as a deal here for a moment,
Yeah, go
because
for
I
it.
don't think this is worth anything to anybody that can't break it up into pieces. You know, like you
What's there
say,
to
the
break up?
business
What's there to
is,
break up though? I mean, what's there to break up? It's a
well,
delivery
why would you
service.
want the why would you want the distribution centers? Because they can't compete with Amazon. They've just
Right.
hiked the
Okay.
prices for, hold on,
Let me just
they've,
stop you
hold
there.
on.
Let me just stop you there, right? The bit that people are missing here, right, regarding IDS is the vast swathe of property.
Which is
It's
true,
land. This is all about land.
which is
No one's
true,
talking about it. No
but
one's talking about it, mate.
I don't know many people that are able to independently get that list of property and value it. I'm not saying it's
Yes.
entirely impossible. I'm just saying it's not that this particular deal, like in theory, I can see the breakup potential. I can see that, I don't know, maybe he's going to sort out the logistics, maybe he's going to put some new IT in. That's him. Right, he's going to have a plan for doing that. Royal Mail management have spent 10 years running the thing into the ground. The staff hate the management, and the management hate the staff. And there's now a massive
True,
gulf
true,
between the two.
true.
You know, now you can go in there as an independent investor and fight. You go, right, management, we're firing all of you. Staff, we're firing all of you. We'll get some new people in that are going to do it a new way, or they're not going to get a job. We'll sell off the bits of land that we don't want. I don't know how you go about doing that bit. But to me, that deal, that doesn't also doesn't necessarily look like a guaranteed winner. He's taking quite a big risk, this Czech guy, that they're going to be able to compete against Amazon. I mean, the Amazon distribution network certainly a couple of years ago, they would give individuals $10,000 to set up their own local distribution network. You don't have to have any stock. They will give you the customers. All you have to do is download an app, go and buy a white van, go and pick up the Amazon parcels and deliver to their customers. They will pay you for doing that.
Henry, they don't have to compete against Amazon. But I'm going to let Phil just jump in here because he's been waiting a little while longer. Go on, Em. Go on, Phil.
I mean, I get what Henry's saying to an extent. I mean, it's but it, you, the thing here is, is it's the letters business. What happens to the actual 6 days a week service of delivering letters, right? Yeah, it might go at 3 days, right? As you say, like they have in France. But that's. I think this is it's going to be a political hot potato. It's going to face a lot of political scrutiny. I wouldn't say this is a slam dunk by any stretch. I mean, on the property side, I mean, there are lots of companies that get touted as like hidden property value. I mean, if the property value was like there to realize, surely the existing management would have done it already. You could have gone in and done a sale and leaseback on the distribution centres and done it that way.
It does make you wonder. I mean, I made the mistake a couple of years ago of buying REITs at a discount to net asset value, which you might go, well, that's exactly what you're supposed to do, Henry, right? You buy a pound for 60p. The problem is that that discount got wider as interest rates went up. And now I'm sat there looking at some of them and going, they were middling businesses 4 years ago. Now they're terrible businesses with a stack of debt, and the management can't close the discount.
Go for it, Phil. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah,
Agreed.
I think the point on the sale and leaseback, though, I'd like to add, is that it's highly dubious whether it actually makes you better off. I mean, these distribution centres, they are operating assets. You can't just flog them because you've still got to have somewhere to operate your business from. And effectively, the value that you would realise in cash from any sale. The obligations to rent it for the next 25, 30 years would be on the other side of your balance sheet for at least the same amount, if not more. So it wouldn't make you any better off anyway, which is probably why it hasn't been done. But we'll see. We'll see. And I'm surprised that it's to take on that the liability of the universal service obligation.
And the pensions.
Yeah.
Oh, and
Yeah,
that
look,
legal case.
this guy, Daniel Pretinsky, is a billionaire. He's not got there by being sloppy. He's done his research. He's looked at every single thing. He's lifted up every single, dustbin and seen is of any value there. And he's if he's offering 370, we know it's worth more than that. Yeah, for synergies and everything else. So, do people spend 3.5 billion and get it wrong? Of course they do. They do it all the time. But he's taking the risk. He's taking the liabilities. He's going for it. Will he be in a better shape in 3 years' time? I haven't got a Scooby. Phil, go.
How much of his own money is he putting down?
Phil, we can talk about Asda and the Morrisons deal all day long. And he's probably putting down 5p for all we know. He ain't going to be putting down 3.5, that's for certain. Yeah, the likelihood he's probably putting down 100 mil if he's lucky. It won't be a lot. Yeah. But this is what leverage buyouts and things happen, and you've got people backing you and borrow from left, right, and they then put it down. If we want to buy a house, we don't put down 200k, do we? We don't have to. We can now. We don't have to put nothing down if we don't want to. We still buy a house for 200k.
Yeah,
It's servicing the debt.
the big difference is that if you and I buy a house and we can't make good on the mortgage, then we're bust.
Absolutely.
If
Absolutely.
you're a private equity outfit, all the debt has got no recourse to you. It's recourse to the company.
Absolutely. Very good point.
More
Very
on
good
this to
point.
come, I'm sure, Pete. I
There's more to
fear.
come, mate. This debacle with Asda and the one with Morrisons, I think the stuff going on there that we're going to be going, why didn't we see this coming? It's coming, folks. It's absolutely
I
coming.
agree.
Right. I'm conscious we didn't get back to you, Phil, regarding the numbers for NASDAQ, Dow Jones, and S&P. If you've got them, please just tell us where it's at and how high they are right now so people can get a measure.
Okay, so as we are talking, the S&P, the Dow is at 39,812. That's plus 0.6%. S&P 500 is at 5,296. That's just shy of a percent. And the Nasdaq 100 is at 1.3% at 18,562.
Wow.
And where
Bottom
were
for
they at the
Nasdaq
beginning of the year,
20,000.
out of curiosity?
Oh God.
Wow. Doing really well. Doing really well.
So the S&P started around the sort of 4,750.
So that's had a good run.
Yeah. The Dow Jones started the year about 37,700.
Had a good run.
And the Nasdaq started at 16,500. So that's put on 2,000 points. So
Amazing.
it's actually
Amazing.
up 12.2% year to date. The S&P is up 11.7%, and the Dow is up 5.6%.
So the Dow's now lagging behind, and even the FTSE's outperforming the Dow. Like you say, it may be our
Yeah,
time to shine.
the FTSE's up
Values.
9.4% in
Nine
price
point four.
terms, not total return, and just in price.
9.4. Yeah, that's really good. Really good. Yeah. Time for it to shine. And as I was saying earlier, I was interviewing the primary markets main guy for Americas for London Stock Exchange today. Very interesting conversation about what's happening and the nuances, to use Henry's favorite word, differences between America investors, markets, etc. And I think we're going to be surprised as to what's going to be happening going forward for our markets. Should be very interesting times ahead. We'll go to you, Henry, I think now, mate. Do you want to
Uh-oh.
share a stock? Do you want to talk about something in particular? Where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about what I've been seeing on social media recently, actually, just in terms of tone of voice, in terms of commentary. So
Right.
people that have read my blog, The Ethical Entrepreneur, and that have listened to me on this podcast for a while or spoken to me in person will know that I am quite a slow, methodical investor. I like my value approach. I like trying to ascertain really what a company is doing as a business, as opposed to what I think a share price is going to do. In theory, those two things are linked, but more over the long term than the short term in many cases. But I've noticed a big uptick in the last couple of months in terms of people talking about what I'd consider to be extremely speculative activities. So I spotted a comment yesterday with somebody saying that they'd bought some Bitcoin and they'd encourage everybody else to go and buy some Bitcoin because Bitcoin could go to $1 million a coin. I mean, it could go to nothing, but it could go to $1 million a coin. And therefore, if you just buy a few of these and leave them in your portfolio, who knows where you'll be 10 years from now? You could be a millionaire. And I thought, I very nearly replied. I thought better of it, but I very nearly replied and said, well, yes, you could also go into the casino and you could put £10 on red on the roulette wheel and you could get a 50% return in 30 seconds. That would be just as valid an approach to me as putting the money on Bitcoin. And I'm seeing more and more of these comments on social media with people talking about options trading, talking about currency pairs, talking about one that really terrified me was binary options, which I don't know if all our audience will know what these are, but effectively they are a gamble on an outcome within a certain time frame. So you buy a binary option and it might ask you, do you think the FTSE 100 is going to be higher or lower in 30 seconds, higher or lower in 5 minutes, higher or lower in an hour or 6 months or a year? The time spans differ, the instruments differ, but the basic concept is that you make a bet that something will be higher or lower, it will be one or the other within a certain time period. And I saw a comment touting this as, a reliable investing strategy, great way to, invest your money. And it really, really terrifies me because I'm now slightly older than I was when I first started investing, and I don't remember being
Are
exposed
you?
to half of this. But the narrative on social media, I feel, is really quite dangerous for people that are new to the game, that don't necessarily know what they're doing. And I don't know if you guys are seeing the same sort of thing. I mean, I know, Phil, you're not on X anymore, but you've got your blog. Peter, I know you're prolific on X. I think you've got 14,000 followers or whatever it is. But are you guys
10,
seeing
10, 10.
much of
Don't
a change
exaggerate
in
it. You've got
narrative?
10. I've seen the
Or just
narrative.
10,000?
I've seen the narrative, mate. The reason why I started this podcast in the first place, the reason why I do the research I do for the Investing Matters podcast, is to be in a position to provide educational content. The reason why you're on this podcast supporting it, and Phil's on the podcast supporting it, is to provide educational content, to try and have people listen to us, not to take our advice regarding a particular stock, but to gain content and direction regarding what to do with what they want to invest in, not to direct them to be doing trading on this stock or binary options on that or whatever. To say, look, here's a fantastic book. Go and read that. Yeah. Spend some time, go and read that book, and that will just expand your brain. Because once you stretch it that far, it's never going to go back to where it was before. Not go and do this, go and do that, go and do this, go and just go back into these podcasts. We've been talking about this, we've been talking about that. What have you learned from it? What have you gained from it? Gain some insight on that. Phil said this, Henry said that. He mentioned that particular stock. I went away and researched it. So I bought some, whatever, whatever. But educate, not to say go and gamble. I bought it, therefore it must be good. I won't do that. That's not the purpose of the podcast, not the purpose of my account. I tweet less and less now, even though I put still a fair bit of content out there. But what I was finding was if I talked about a stock too often, I was ramping it. Other people could talk about a stock every 5 seconds if they wanted to, and it was fine. It's fair game. If I did it, it was noise. It was rampant. It was abuse. It was like, whoa, why is he doing that? So I've pulled back. Yeah. Now I tell people what I'm doing regarding other stuff. And if one of my stocks are doing well, I tell them about it. If one of my stocks doing bad, I tell them about it. Am I ramping the same stock every single day relentlessly? Absolutely not. And you just need to look on some people's timeline as to what they're doing. And it's not really about them trying to educate anybody. They're trying to influence people's behavior, to encourage people's behavior. And I'm not an advocate for people going down the route of taking really speculative short-term punts on the market. Because the shorter the time frame of you having a punt on the market in anything, the higher the percentage of you losing. Yeah. There is no books written by anybody I know via that I've known as any sort of celebrity or any sort of individual that's been on FinTwit or Twitter, that's been at Mello, that's been at any sort of seminars that I've been in, that's become a millionaire in the past 10 years from trading stocks. Not one I can think of. Yeah. Do I know anybody that's gone from middling to whatever investing wise and become a millionaire? Yes, I do. Yeah. Is it difficult? Hell yes, it is. The greater the number, the greater the psychology batters you down as to what you're going to do next. Yeah. So do not take, you do not need to take the risk. Am I going to, I was told to buy Bitcoin at £400. I think was it 400, 450, $500 a share, dollars a coin. And I went, don't understand it. And people said, well, you're a stupid idiot not having jumped on that. Then he missed out. It's at whatever it is now, at 60 grand a coin. Yeah. I don't feel I've missed out. I've done other stuff with my time. I wasn't going like that every single day like I was on a booking. I said with a B word there, guys, booking Bronco. You don't need to do it. But some people will. And you mentioned it as well, Henry. The age of some of these individuals that are getting involved in the highly speculative stuff. There are people that have worked in the city that are trading options and binary options and so on and so forth. And they've got the expertise. They've got 15, 20 years of expertise. Let them get on with it. It's their money. It's their slush funds. It's their whatever they want to do with it. Let them crack on with it. Yeah. The other people that are just coming in with their first £1,000 in the market, I want them to be in the market in 10 years' time with that £1,000 slowly but steadily becoming 5, 10, 25, and then feeling confident now to make a bigger bet on the market towards their pension, their SIP, or whatever, or for their daughter or their son or their whatever else they want to do, buy their first property. Not to have gone £1,000 in, blown it up straight away, and gone, I'm never going to invest in the market, because that's what happens.
I think that
So
is a
no,
lot
I'm
of
not an
what
advocate for
happens.
that sort of stuff on Twitter, but there will
You
be more of
know,
it, Henry,
I'm
because people want this instant gratification.
talking about being in the market for 10 years. There was a really interesting article in Shares Magazine this week from their editor, Dan Coatsworth.
Dan
And
Coatsworth, okay.
he'd written an article about the makeup of the FTSE 350. And he'd listed out a little table, which I think he pulled the data from SharePad, which was actually why it caught my eye. But he'd listed out the returns since, I think it was 1999, 2000, something like that, of some of the top companies in the FTSE 350. And they're all really, really interesting names. You know, there was Diploma in there, I think, with, you know, a 15, 14,000% return since 1999. JD Sports was like 9,000%. Howden Joinery, I think, was in there. That was a few thousand percent return. Ashtead, Halma, Croda, which are names that I
All
have
my
heard
Croda.
of. But the thing that I really liked about the article that he'd written was that he was talking about how these were quite boring companies. They weren't doing the new sexy, you know, they weren't inventing the Terminator or whatever. It wasn't Bitcoin Mark II. These were normal businesses doing normal things that all of us see in the real economy. We all use, we all rely on. And actually, if you'd done the analysis on these businesses and seen their potential and you'd looked at the underlying performance, you know, Phil goes through this in his book, How to Invest in Quality Stocks. And you actually look at the performance of the businesses, you'd probably have spotted a lot of these and you'd have these mega returns. I mean, 10,000% over 20 years. I'll take that.
Just spot on. Go, Phil.
I think it works the other way around as well. You know, you see businesses that you just think, how on earth can that be worth a lot of money? And you see people ramping it, you know. How many pub companies have we seen ramped over the last 20 years? When, you know, anybody who takes time to understand a pub, for example, realizes it's bloody hard to make money from it. And I think the other two interesting ones are, you know, companies like Peloton, right? So we've seen Peloton go to virtually nothing, and things like Cazoo. And you know, if you actually just look at the fundamentals of those business, you know, an exercise, an ex a company selling ex expensive exercise bikes with a computer screen stuck on it, being valued at ridiculous amounts of money, and some another company, you know, buying secondhand cars as if they're going out of fashion, being valued at ridiculous, you know, ridiculous amounts. And you know, never accept that the market gets it right. The market is stupid, high up and low down. And so yeah, it's but you know, I think with what Henry's saying is that I think you know I've been what doing this I don't know, nearly 30 years. And I think the mark, you know, things like social media and that kind of thing have and YouTube have the element, the gambling element, I think has never been higher. I think the, you know, the casino-like nature of stock markets or markets in general has never been higher. And you know, that's why, you know, this is called an investing podcast for investors. And the problem with all this is that for a while it looks like the gamblers and the rampers are right because they get a following and the crowd piles in and the price goes up and the people who haven't bought start feeling like they've missed out, and then they go in and it goes pop, and they lose loads of money. And this kind of this kind of thing is just, been around for centuries, and it's still here in spades.
Yep, and it will keep on keeping on, unfortunately. So yeah. Henry, what did you want to finish? Did you finish off on your point regarding the markets and what you've been seeing on that? Because
I
it's not
did,
really getting
yeah. I
better,
mean,
mate.
my.
We're heading towards summer. It's getting warmer, mate, and people go a bit leery when the sun comes out. So we're going to see more of the nonsense on Twitter, unfortunately,
Yeah, for
on
sure. I
X.
mean, though, to be perfectly honest with you, if you're going to go day trading or options trading or binary options gambling, I'd rather you went down to the casino and put it all on red. Not that it's any of my business what you do with your money, to be honest with you, but go and enjoy it. There's much better ways of enjoying it than sitting behind a screen and hoping that the FTSE goes up 5 points in half an hour. And if you're serious about looking after your money and growing your money and being responsible with your money, because let's face it, it's hard enough to come by. It doesn't just walk in the door every morning, in bucket loads. If you're serious about looking after your money, then take the time to learn about how the market works and take the time to learn about valuations, and also take the time to learn about company finances. Accounting is a dry topic at points, but it will pay you back in spades. I guarantee it. It will pay you back in spades if you actually understand how a company is performing financially and operationally. And if you can learn to understand that and interpret it, hey, maybe in 10 years' time, you'll be on a podcast like this, talking about a 15,000% rise you've had.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm going to switch lanes a little bit here, guys. We had a couple of weeks back, we should give him a name before the name sort of thing, but we haven't given it to him. Guru, Warren Buffett had his Berkshire Hathaway Omaha-a-thon. And obviously, it was a bit sad because it was the first one in I don't know how many years I've been running it. Without Charlie Munger, so we have to salute and say rest in peace, Charlie Munger, for all he gave to everybody over the years. And this is about paying it forward and giving back, educating people, never touting, never ramping, always investing in for the long term and being opportunistic when the opportunity arises. But between them both, they absolutely made it better for everyone to think about the markets and invest in the markets in a very studious, diligent way, and have enriched lots and lots of people who've become millionaires via the company, producing I think 1900 points percentage return since June slash May of 1996. That's 30 years of returns if my numbers are correct. So they've done fantastically well. There's two books here which I've got from a friend, which are now in my library because he no longer wanted them. One of it
For
happens to be on
those
the
that
top
aren't
as
on
well.
YouTube, that was Buffettology by
The book, So you've got Buffettology by Mary Buffett and Darren Clark, and you've got The Buffett Way, The Third Way by Robert G. Angstrom. Two books
I've
there.
got a copy
So,
of that, and it's absolutely fantastic, that Warren Buffett way.
okay. So what I'm going to do, just bear with me, guys. So I'll have to write all this down because I will not remember it all on the top of my head. Hopefully Phil doesn't drop off because he's been out in the sun today, whilst I'm talking through this. But I wanted to, and what I will do is I'll put a separate note on my website regarding this so you guys can actually, ladies, can pick it up properly. A lot of this information that I pulled together here is via Buffett himself, also incorporated some nuances from Phil's fantastic book about finding quality shares as well. So a bit of a blend here. So none of it's copyrighted, folks. So just bear with me and stay tuned, okay? So what I'm going to do is talk about some of the metrics regarding Buffett, and one of the things he says, well, one of the, he said loads of things. The average person does not know what stocks to buy, but they don't have to. Yeah, periodically you should just buy an index fund. Yeah, so occasionally you don't know what to do, you're worried about the market, by an index fund. When you're not so worried about the market, spend some time to do the research, okay? Spend some time to do the filters. You know, I'd advocate you buying the ShareScope, SharePad, you know, software, filtering through, finding your own stocks, researching them, reading about them. Here's a filter that you could utilize to get quality stocks, okay? So here we go. First of all, you've got to try and find a business that you understand. So Phil always talks about going to the shop. What products do you buy? What's in your kitchen cupboard? What's in your bathroom cupboard? And so on and so forth. Yeah. Find a business that's got favorable long-term prospects. Most importantly, Henry and I have come scuppered by this only recently. Is the company operated by competent people? Yeah. Is the company available at an attractive price? Okay. So we set up the screen and we start to filter that, okay? So we try to narrow down the screen of a, you know, a couple of thousands of stock. Filter one, yeah, for higher quality stocks. Market cap of more than 1 billion. Why? Because the companies are more likely to be mature and have the financial history needed to make an informed decision. Yeah, so it's a market cap of $1 billion slash 800 million in the UK. Okay. Filter two, price to earnings ratio of less than 15. Why? A P of 15 equals $1, £1 of earnings for every 15 you've invested. So that's a 6.7% return on earnings. The cheaper you can buy earnings, the more value you are obtaining. Filter three, return on equity more than 15%. Why? Management's objective is to achieve an ROE, return on equity, higher than that of the industry in general. Yeah, so the UK or the American, depending on which one you're looking at. The higher the return on equity, the better. Filter four, Henry's favorite, long-term debt to equity, less than one. Yeah. Why? This fits with Buffett. Right, he prefers companies with little or no debt. Henry's always beating me up for, has it got debt, Pete? What am I saying? Yeah, so little or no debt. Henry's happy, Buffett's happy. Filter five, 5 years of earnings per share growth of more than 10%. Buffett wants a proven history of profit growth. Higher equals better. Then you get into step two here. Check the company's financial history. What you want to see here is to make sure the company has a solid past performance. This gives us confidence in the long term regarding prospects and management's competency. Long term, are they competent? Check the financials. You can go back 5 years, but ideally you want to go back 10 years. So that tells you to keep away from some of the newer REITs, the newer IPOs, and so on and so on and so forth. Not that all IPOs are duds. The private equity guys that are ladies that are listing some of these companies, they're not all going to turn out to be Doc Martens and give you a kick in the smalls. Okay. Ask about the revenue. Did the revenue grow? Did the EPS grow? Did the return on equity stay high? Did the debt stay stable or shrink? Step two, research the business. Read the annual reports and ask, what's their business model? What problem are they solving? Who is making the decisions? What is their competitive advantage? If you don't understand any of these easily enough, get rid. Goes back again. If you don't understand what the company's doing and you can't articulate it to your cousin that's 7 years of age, yeah, or your niece or your nephew that's 10, if you can't explain it to them in simple terms, then maybe it's a bit too complicated. Maybe you might need to just leave it behind. Yeah. So now you should, using that sort of filter, and you can tweak it as much as you want, have a business you understand, with favorable long-term prospects, operated by competent people, and available at an attractive price, hopefully undervalued before the market gets wind of it. And then we can talk about five stocks, right? Five stocks very quickly, right? And in 2023, given the size of Buffett's portfolio or Berkshire Hathaway's holdings, I think it's the last time I looked, I did write it down somewhere. I think that BRK was worth lost it now. 844, if my grey matter is working. 844, 850 billion, right? Warren Buffett at the Omaha convention admitted that he had 200 billion in cash. 8-2 shows how much cash is there sitting on the sidelines to do what he wants. And why does he have cash? Because it's optionality. When he sees an opportunity, he can go in and go, wallop, I'm buying half of that, all of that, or whatever. But interestingly, what I wanted to touch on here is when you buy a stock, you found that quality stock, you've held it for ages, right? You end up compounding not only the returns on the stock, but the dividend yield you first bought it at. Okay. And this is significant. Okay. So you've got somebody who's a £1 million portfolio. It's grossing 6%. What's that? 60K. You gross that over 12 months. What's that? 5K a month. You gross that over 4.5 weeks of the year. 1200 quid. Yeah. So each time that dividend comes in, you've got 1200 quid to add to a stock, maybe. It's not a lot, you think. Okay. When you compound that 60 grand over X amount of years, X amount of years. Yeah. You're doubling that money every 10 years. So your 100K becomes 200K and so on and so forth. Warren Buffett in 2023 earned 3.75 billion from just five stocks. And those five stocks were losing everything here now at the minute, were Apple, Bank of America, Chevron, Coca-Cola, and American Express. Apart from Apple, no one's ramping Bank of America. No one's ramping Chevron. No one's ramping Coca-Cola. No one's ramping American Express. 3.75 billion was generated in 2023 for Berkshire Hathaway. I rest my case. You don't have to buy what's hot. You don't have to buy what's being ramped. You can go the Buffett way and get rich slowly, guys, ladies. You don't have to chase what everyone else is chasing. You can do your own research, find your own stock, find your own Apple stock, find your own Chevron stock, find your own Coca-Cola stock, and wait for it. Today, we had our own little Coca-Cola moment today. Phil, do you see that? We've lost Phil. Hello, Phil. Britvic.
I
See the
did
results of
see
Britvic
it, yeah.
today?
I did.
I will
I did,
talk. We'll
yeah.
talk about that one later. That's my little. It wasn't a rant. I hope people will take that in the purpose that I wanted it to be educational and maybe go away and think about using their own screen and filters to find their own stocks. Go to you first, Bill. Thoughts on Buffett's way, your way of finding quality stocks, please.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously Warren Buffett, his investment record speaks for itself. But what I will say is that he's doing a lot of things that we can't do.
Yes. Yes, very true.
And you know, I've always felt deep down that Buffett is like he's a dividend investor. And this is why he buys com he wants to buy companies outright. He doesn't want to be exposed to the ups and downs, the volatility of the stock market. He wants to make money by owning businesses, taking the cash flows off those businesses and reinvesting them. Which sounds great in a textbook, but you know, I'll give you a great example how Warren Buffett is like why he's better off than us. Right. So let's say you've got, we'll keep this really simple. Let's say you've got a business that you can buy for £100. Yeah. And that company earns £10 a year in profit. And you have the choice. You can either buy that stock, buy that on the stock market, or you can buy that business outright. And for simplicity, the company doesn't pay a dividend. So we go and buy that stock on the stock market, and Warren Buffett goes and buys it outright, the similar company outright. In a year's time, the share price hasn't changed and it hasn't paid a dividend, but it's still earning £10 a share, but we haven't seen any of it because it's not being paid to us. So our return is zero, right? But because Warren owns the company all right outright, he's pocketed the 10 quid. His return is 10%. And this is
That's
one of
it.
the real sort of basic things that you need to understand about Warren Buffett and his returns. Now, he will argue that, you know, that his share portfolio is undervalued because understated because he only receives the dividends and he doesn't receive the earnings from it and that kind of thing. But that is the big difference between him. I mean, and it, you know, you saw it in the financial crisis when he was like doing deals with like Bank of America and Goldman
Goldman
Sachs,
Sachs, yeah,
and he was like
Bank of Last Resort, yeah.
buying preference shares with 9% dividends on them, and then he had an option to buy the shares at a dirt cheap price. That's the kind of deal that we can't do. Yeah. Or very rarely do you get the chance to do that kind of thing. So, you know, Warren Buffett has been a great example in the past, and I think a lot of his lessons are still very valuable in terms of, you know, the advice he gives in terms of what to look for in a business. But whether you can't really copy what he does now, and also he's got, you know, a load of insurance float. So he's got, you know, a lot of premiums that get paid into his insurance business, which he has to set aside to pay out on any claims. But if his premiums keep growing, that float is almost permanent. Again, that's a massive advantage of free money that we haven't got. So I've read a lot of books about Warren Buffett and that kind of thing, and I'm not saying that they've been wasted, but my views towards him are sort of much more sort of nuanced now than they were 20 years ago. But I think the interesting thing for me about Buffett now is that he is holding this very big chunk of cash, you know, nearly two, you know, they reckon it will be over 200 billion by the end of the year. And you know, he's not putting that cash to work. And I think, you know, he may be 94 years old, but he's still a really sharp guy. And I think that itself is quite telling of what he thinks, you know, on the value of companies, that they're quite high, and he can't get a decent return off them. So I think the message for me is that he's sitting on cash because he thinks the stock market's overvalued.
Yeah, and the caveat with that would be overvalued potentially in America, because there's been talk historically over decades he's going to come and shop in the UK, he's going to come and buy something in the UK. He still hasn't done it. I'm waiting for that conversation to be had again, because it will be had
Well,
again at some point
didn't he
during this
buy a
year.
stake in Asda that went horribly wrong?
Yeah, he did. He did.
You know, and that was the last deal he did
Him.
over here.
I don't remember
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, it was
Yeah,
about
he
10
bought.
years ago, I think. He came and bought a chunk of it,
No, he
and
bought
then.
a stake in Tesco.
Oh, was it
Did Tesco?
Tesco? Sorry,
Yeah,
not
he
Asda.
did.
I've got
He
my
did.
supermarkets mixed
Yeah.
up. Yeah.
Everyone makes
Yeah.
mistakes.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to SharePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Yeah,
Yeah, everyone does. Every day is a
but
mistake for me, mate. But
but
yeah, he
it's
bought in
like,
and that went pear shaped, because I think he thought Walmart were going to buy it out as well. You know, he's going to get in bed with them, but they fought it off, didn't they?
think the thing
Was that the
is with
story, Phil?
Buffett, yeah, I think the thing is with Buffett is that his business is so big, right? He needs to do a really, really big deal to move the dial. You know, it's the law of big numbers. You know, buying a small company at a fantastic price is not going to move the value of Berkshire Hathaway that much. So he needs to do, you know, a mega billion-dollar deal. You know, arguably 100 billion plus or whatever. Or 60 billion, shall we say. And that's why he won't be coming shopping over here. You
I
know.
mean, I've just got the numbers back there. I found the sheet of paper. So when I came onto this pod, the shares were just above $411 per share. Obviously, there's been a few splits historically. Market cap of 886.33 billion. Then you've got 190 plus billion in cash. So let's just round numbers up and say, that's a quarter. Yeah, one fourth in cash. Most people advocating always being fully invested. I've never been an advocate of that. You can rely on your dividends to make purchases, but they're only going to be small. If you've got some optionality, some cash on the side, when there's an opportunity, you see something in the press, you go, no one else is looking at that one. You can go in and buy a full chunky wedge of something and wait for other people to find out what the news is. And then when the takeover comes, like, the other one I was going to talk about, I might as well talk about it now. IQGO, have you guys seen that one? Little software company.
We spoke about that a little while back.
We spoke about it a while back. I'm not sure what podcast we spoke about it, but essentially, it's got a recommended offer. Let me find my notes on this one. So IQG is the ticker. £1.87 in October of 2023. £1.87, folks. So let's round it up to £2 if you want to. In October, end of October, yesterday hit a new all-time. Well, I'm not sure if it was an all-time, yeah, I think it was an all-time high. Maybe not. £4.80 recommended bid. Not a stock that most people talk about. But the CEO basically got in nearly just less than 9 years ago. Share price at the time was 40p. Went in, did his due diligence, said we don't need that, we don't need that. Yeah, sold off a division for nearly the market cap at the time when he sold that division off, and then resorted out the business. So the shares have 10 bagged and more, 12 bagged, since it took over. And who's come in to buy it? Private equity. KKR's come. Yeah, we'll buy that for £4.80 pence per share. Valuing the company at approximately £333 million. What I want to say about this one is really, really interesting bit here. We see a lot of people take great pleasure in talking about the nonsense of EBITDA. They talk about EBITDA as, in such a derogatory way. I'm not a big fan of EBITDA, if I'm honest with you. But you've got to remember that the powers that be, the people that are generating and they've got 2 trillion on the sideline, they live on EBITDA. Who are they? Private equity. Why are they the largest firms in the business? Why is there nearly 2,000 of them in America alone? Because they make a stupid amount of money and they use EBITDA all day long. So ridicule EBITDA all you want, ladies and gents, but these guys and ladies that are in private equity love it. No, I'm not going to interrupt me, Phil. I'm going to flow. Let me just carry on before you interrupt me and say something sensible, right? Bear with me. This particular deal, right, for IQG talked about 14 times IQE's exit annual recurring revenue. Their revenue in 2023 was 21 million, been taken out for 333 million. Bear with me, folks, right? So, full year revenue for 2023. Annual revenue was 21. Full revenue for 2023 was 45. And they've got taken out at 48.1 times their adjusted EBITDA. No one likes EBITDA. 6.6 million, right? They had their first year of profitability in 2023, right? But this is a new one on me, Phil. And I'm not even sure that you've seen this one before, right? And I'll give you both an opportunity to answer the question because I've got the answer in front of me here. I've never seen this one before. EBITDA C on the end. EBITDA C.
EBITDA.
139 times 0.6. So 140 times IQE's adjusted EBITDA, EBITDAC of 2.3. EBITDAC, Phil. Do you remember? Have you ever recall? Have you seen that one in your days?
See?
Because you were doing proper numbers before, mate, with an abacus. These private equity guys are using algorithms and AI to crunch these numbers. EBITDAC is the new phrase that's coming towards us.
I'll just say, I think the algorithm is absolutely buggered. if it's thrown out, that price is sensible. But
yeah, do you know what the C stands for? And don't call me names. Don't be getting personal. What does the C stand for? Right. Okay. Listen, guys, I'm educating you all now. Not just you two on the screen. Right. Okay. Listen to this one. I didn't know until today. I had to look it up myself. I was like, what the? Anyway, EBITDAC is a non-GAAP metric that measures earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization, and coronavirus 1234.
What?
Hold on. Bear with me. Let me finish. It is a special case of adjusted EBITDA, which is a common term in business valuation and brokerage space. EBITDAC is a new metric that has been introduced following the global COVID-19 pandemic, and it is used to show how a business would have performed without the impact of the virus. What the hell is going on in the world of finance?
That's the biggest load of nonsense I have ever heard. They've lost the plot.
My brain.
You might as well adjust for the fact it's a Thursday and the sky is blue. I mean, honestly,
Phil, you wanted to jump in earlier. Just go now, because I'm exhausted with that. I was like, what?
Yeah, private equity. There are some smart people working in private equity, but you know, there's also another side to it, which is using lots of other people's money. Gearing up businesses with lots of debt. And the reason why they love EBITDA is because they don't invest. You talk about private equity buying Morrisons or Asda. And I've seen it over the years. They use EBITDA. So depreciation and amortization are a proxy for, maintenance expenditures to maintain the assets of a business. So, generally speaking, if you can't spend EBITDA because the DA has to go back into the business if you've got long-term aspirations to stop your business falling to bits. But there are businesses that have been owned by private equity. Not all. There are some smart guys who've gone in and revolutionized the way they operate, grown the business, and done good jobs. There's a lot that's just been starved of investment, huge amounts of borrowed money, and then flogged back to gullible fund managers on the stock market.
Not Martin being a prime example.
Yeah, it's financial engineering.
Absolutely.
Businesses being fattened up for sale. And it's all because a lot of it is because debt payments are deductible against tax, whereas savings and equity are not. And it's been a great way to get rich, actually, probably for the last 50 years, is leverage. But leverage works both ways. And if you've got a following wind behind you, you've got a lot of leverage, you're going to make a lot of money. If you turn into a headwind, you're going to get wiped out. And therefore the luck is basically time in your leverage so you don't get wiped out. But Charlie Munger's written some great stuff on EBITDA. And he used to call them bullshit earnings. And he's right.
And he was spot on, Phil.
Yeah,
It was
right.
spot
And
on.
yeah, you know, but it's like, you know, it's like, you know, you see it now, you know, EBITDA or the, you know, the other thing that investors need to really pay attention to is, you know, adjusted profits. You know, you'll get companies will have, you know, their accounting profits, and then they'll adjust them to make them look as big as possible. And the stuff that gets ignored in adjusted profits is, you know, can sometimes raise an eyebrow to. And you know, the one that I see a lot of, you know, at the moment, I see far too much of is, you know, companies who pay their employees with shares, and they say, "Oh, don't worry about that. That
That's
doesn't
not a
count.
real cost.
It's not a
Yeah.
real cost because we haven't shelled out any cash." But you know,
You've diluted shareholders.
the shareholder have lost that value. That value is a transfer of value away from you, and it's a future dilution of your stake in the business. But never mind, it's don't worry about it. And there's just lots of businesses doing that. So learning how to interpret figures is, as you say, is very important. And EBITDA is pretty much never a reliable number on its own to base a decision on. You know, businesses do have to reinvest. They do have to pay interest on debt. They do have to pay tax. But yeah, it seems to be alive and well. But my advice to anybody listening to this podcast is ignore it.
Sage words indeed. Henry, do you want to add anything to Phil Sage wisdoms shared regarding that?
I think that's a very wise overview. I mean, I if anybody reads my Twitter, I occasionally use EBITDA where it's reported by a company. But my preferred metric of a company's performance, you know, you've got your top line revenue, you've got your earnings per share as reported, and you've got your net asset value. And all of those can be manipulated, but are harder to manipulate, and cash balances as well, harder to manipulate. Now, they're not impossible, but certainly when you get into adjusting your figures for coronavirus exemptions, I mean, you know, I'm absolutely speechless. I'm sure some analysts thought they'd hit the jackpot with that, but to me, that's just. If you close your eye and you try really, really hard, this looks like a good deal. If you're having to try that hard to make it look like a good deal, it's probably not.
Absolutely. I, you know, if you reference Phil's book, you know, the idea is really to always look the cash flow, the cash flow, the cash flow. You know, that will save you a lot of noise. What's the cash flow? Has it increased? It's the hardest thing to manipulate. Yeah. So yeah. Absolutely. Right, Henry, we're gonna go to you, mate, here now, I think. Regarding
Yes,
you want to do
competition.
the winners, or do you want to put it off? We've got some other stuff to talk about. We can put it off another week if you want. It's entirely up to
No,
you.
I was going to say, actually, shall we end on a high note? Have some winners.
Yeah, race through the winners. Tell us about that. I'm going to talk about a couple of takeovers. Phil's got a few more bits to share as well before we go. So we'll try and condense it as quickly as we can. We've already been here an
So,
hour and a bit.
April's Twin Peaks Stock Challenge winner, for those that are just joining us, at the beginning of the year, about 140 of us went and picked five fantasy shares. Those shares are measured as a basket over the month, and the winner for each month wins one of 12 books, the link to which can be found on Peter's website and will also be on Twitter. Now,
We're at
the
15
winner
books. We're at 15. We're at
at
15
15,
books.
sorry.
What? And then
That's me getting
one
my
per
numbers
month.
wrong.
Yeah, one per month for the winner. 15 for the winner overall, and
Excellent.
maybe get some for the runner up as well. Sorry, carry on.
Excellent. Yeah, that's embarrassing. Getting my numbers wrong on an investing podcast. Please don't start
It
screaming EBITDA at me.
happens. What did Phil say? We all make mistakes. It's a lot to carry it. People don't realize how difficult these podcasts are to carry so much information in your head. It's a nightmare. Any wonder that I'm the only one here without any hair, you know?
It's hard enough having it written down. So our winner for April had a very, very good April, a 46% return in their portfolio.
What? Henry, you're doing it. Go in reverse order, mate. You always go to number
Reverse.
one.
There was a
Come on,
reason for
mate.
that, Peter. There was a reason for that. But okay, we'll go from
Oh.
three to one. In which case, in third place, with a return of 25% for the month,
Thank
was
you.
Go Left Massa, our friend Ben.
Ben. Well done, Ben. And he's a regular listener,
Very
so
well
you'd be
done.
well chuffed to hear that.
25%, a very creditable return in 1 month. In second place was our friend at Smudge Dan with a return of
Smudge Dan.
29%.
Yeah, he's got a good regular sort of portfolio there. Yeah.
And in first place, if you are now ready, if you're firmly seated in your seat, you've got your popcorn ready.
And tell us
In
the
first
stocks that
place,
the stocks as well, Henry. Tell us the stocks as well. And do the drums.
holding Phoenix Copper, holding, I've got the names here somewhere, which I've now gone and misplaced, holding East Star Resources, holding Emerson, holding Geiger Counter, and holding Burford Capital. And with a return of 46%, was at Donald Pond.
Bravo. Bravo.
46% for the month of April. So very well done. So those are our three winners, or our three placings, I should say, for the month of April. So if you write in Donald and let us know which one of the 15 books you would like, we will get that mailed out to you.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations there, Donald. Phoenix Copper, East, oh. Burford. Well, there you go.
East Star Resources was the real standout with a
East Star.
150% return.
Wow. Is that a tiny, tiny one? Is it?
It's a
E-E-E-E,
little
is it something?
resources business, yeah.
Tiny
EST
one.
is the ticker.
EST, that one. Okay. Empire's the E-E-E one. Well, there you go. Shows what's possible in a month. 46%. Well. What do you say about that? What do you say about that, Phil? Hey?
It's
Can't
good.
say anything. Phil's
It's
stunned in
good.
silence. He's sitting there smiling away.
It's
Right,
good.
we're
It's
almost.
good. It's good. I think I don't think Donald would mind me saying this. There's it comes with buying the kind of quite risky shares, and Donald has been compensated perhaps for the risk he's been taken, and well done to Donald.
I love how politely you can say that. I would, up north, we say it completely different, Phil. Very well done, so eloquently, mate. Right. I was going to talk about the takeovers of DS Smith from International Paper. Anglo American is going through all sort of shenanigans and battles with BHP. I suspect there's going to be other companies getting involved. With that, lots of geopolitical stuff going on regarding that. I own the shares. My average price is £17.50. The last offer was £27.53. I think if there is a third bid, it goes to £29, and then they'll then open the books. If there's not an offer, the share price gets absolutely spanked. If there's a third offer, I suspect that others will start looking around. Well, the whole company as well, including Chinese companies and all the other bits and pieces that they've now come out with the strategies saying that they're going to divest, spin off, demerge, etc. The whole ball of wax that's left for the rump for the whole of the company is £35 to £36 per share. BHP only wants to buy the bits that it wants to buy for 27.53 at the minute. They're going to go to 29 for that, and we'll see what happens with the rest of it. That's my view. I could be completely wrong, but we'll see what happens regarding that. And then the other one that I've got, the third one I've got, is Wood Group. That's got a situation going on here. And that's in the throes of being looked at by Cirrada, if I get the name right. Been a long day. And they've bid for the company 205-ish. Their first bid. They're possibly going to come back and bid again. You had, forget the name of the company now, my brain's gone. Bid for it last year, and then walked away from the bid, and the share price crashed. So you've got to be, cognizant of that. If it proceeds and it becomes a battle for the stock, given the progress I've made over the last 12 months, because I did my intrinsic value sum of parts research on Wood Group, and I felt it was cheap as chips. I suspect it's going to go for at least I won't say what I think it's going to go for, but we'll see what the bat what happens with this particular battle. If it doesn't continue, then the share price gets tanked again. So we'll see what happens. But this could be an interesting battle, especially given the news today of another sleepy stock, which Phil, I'm sure, has looked at, called Hunting, which had a massive deal in Saudi in from the Kuwait oil company, and the share price rocked. I think it was 18% today. And again today, another sleepy stock, which we've all advocated that people go and have a look at. Alex de Groot, on this particular podcast in November, advocated people go and look at it. The share price was £29 per share at the time. Today, the share price went nearer to 38. So it's 30% for a FTSE 100 company in 4 or 5 months. I rest my case about the quality of the UK stock market and the opportunities that are out there. Phil, any parting words, mate? As eloquently as you can partake, mate. A long
Yes.
session.
Yeah. Just
Go for it.
on the Anglo-American thing, I think what happens when you get a bid for any companies that people will look around for similar companies that perhaps can be seen to be undervalued based on the bid. And I think, quite clearly, copper is a very scarce resource, and it's getting harder and harder to get it out of the ground. And I just want to highlight, and I've written a couple of articles on copper companies. If you head over to Citywire Elite Companies, I've written a hopefully quite an interesting piece on two Canadian copper miners. Capstone Copper is one, and then First Quantum Minerals is the other. Capstone Copper has got a very interesting development pipeline of copper mines. First Quantum is a more risky play based on what's gone on in the business. But if you want to head over there and read a bit more about copper, because I think we're going to hear a lot more about copper. If the world electrifies to the extent that it does, just a plug
Electrification,
there.
brilliant, Phil. I find it really. I'm like, whoa, I can't recall you ever writing about mining companies. You're always like, So that's brilliant that you're doing that. Electrification, EVs. There's now talk as well about the need for copper regarding AI because of the data center and the supercomputers that we're going to be using. So the exponential requirements for copper is going to mean that the deficit is going to probably come even quicker. So what the mining companies are doing, instead of spending the massive capex of starting from scratch, they're buying the assets rather than starting from development sources. So that's where the consolidation is going to be going on and on and on. And it's the reason we've got a situation now where there's a $43 billion deal, and the company goes, nah, we don't want that. We want more, or we don't want it at all. So interesting times. Thank you for that, Phil. I will give those Citywire things articles a read as well. And I've just clocked the company for Wood Group here. Apollo bid 240. I think it was a fourth bid last year around this time and was rejected. Wood Group's improved, so I suspect that the share price is going to go towards 3 quid at some point, nearer that end, above 250. Henry, parting words, mate. Another marathon. My fault for talking too much, I think, probably. Apologies. Get you to your tea in a minute, Scoobies. What's your parting words other than stay away from trading options and binary BS?
Yes, do stay away from that, ladies and gentlemen. But no, just a thank you for tuning in as always. But also a thank you to those of you that have donated to our charity fundraise. So for those of you that don't know, this year we are raising for Centrepoint, the UK's leading homelessness charity. You can find the page at justgiving.com/page/ Twin Peaks Challenge 24. We are very fortunate in the last couple of days to have had another £100 from Kevin Taylor. Best of luck hitting your target for such a great cause. And also from Andy, £7 plus £1.75 gift aid. Enjoy the great podcasts from you guys. A wealth of knowledge always. Cheers. So thank you very much, Andy, and thank you very much, Kevin. We've also got the Reluctant Investor cycling across the country. And please, please do engage with him on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. He's doing an absolutely fantastic job. I'm not entirely sure where he is right now, but he's about 12 days into the journey. We're getting some fantastic photographs. And I'm also very proud to say that he is picking up donations as he goes. So someone at a campsite donated money, someone at the pub donated money. I think one of the customers in a shop he walked into donated money, someone in a coffee shop donated. So we are picking up donations across the country as a result of his epic journey. So if you're not following him on Twitter, please do go and look him up. He's the Reluctant Investor. Cycling from one end of the country to another, flying a flag for the Twin Peaks podcast, and in particular our Centrepoint fundraise. So thank you very much and best of luck with your continued journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. Big shout out. You can find his account on X at the Reluctant IN2 on Twitter. He's putting out various different pictures, occasionally stopping for a pint, which is great to see him getting refreshed and recharged. And he's had a fair bit of rain and drizzle. So every now and then, he just needs to just give him a little cheer regarding what he's doing and just give him a little nice comment to keep him boosted regarding the heavy cycling that he's doing from Land's End to John O'Groats. Okay, folks, absolute marathon. Jared will be pleased again, unfortunately. For those of you that have to listen to this in two bites, apologies. But we have covered a fair bit of ground. Hopefully, you've found some of this educational. Please, please, please like it on YouTube. Give us a follow on the various different channels. Give us some feedback on Twitter and X. Retweet it, share it. If there's anything that you liked about it, tell us about it. And please follow the Twitter account at HT Viola for Henry, our co-host here, Henry Viola Hare. And please subscribe to Henry's blog. I don't know the link for it, Henry, so you'll have to tell them what that is in a second.
It's the ethicalentrepreneur.com.
Say it again, sorry.
It's the ethicalentrepreneur.com.
Okie dokie, thank you. And please follow Phil Oakley with his studious, diligent, heavily researched investing blog, which is just all about investing stuff. Ladies and gents, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being on this podcast with you again and delivering this podcast 127 for you. It's now nearly 8 o'clock. I need to go have some food. Take care. God bless. Stay kind. Pay it forward. Bye bye, Phil. Bye bye, Henry.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.